It is pointless to demand of the familiari Christianization of the world unless they be adequately armed with a full understanding of what they are about. It is equally pointless to pretend that they are not capable of assimilating the rich doctrine of marriage. There is in this attitude a fundamental injustice that should have no place in Catholic thought. Couples have a strict right to the fullness of Christian revelation in what concerns their proper vocation. The teaching church is under strict obligation to render it available and intelligible to them. This book is a brilliant effort in that direction. Each page penetrates more deeply into the truth of marriage. The authors here are not concerned with defending the Christian ideal of marriage. They desire above all to bear living witness to it. They go beyond the legalistic and moral definitions of marriage into that realm where only strong faith fights the way. They embrace the whole scope of Christian marriage and explore every possibility it offers for a more intense life and closer union with God. Marriage in their minds is less an institution than a way of life, a vocation. It is a heartening sign of our times that these essays have grown out of a living experience. The writers are spokesmen for a group of Christian families who have faced their problems together. Periodically, these families meet with their chaplains in the informal atmosphere of the home. Their problems directed them to the founts of revelation. What they learned here gave them the courage which those who pursue a difficult mission always need. It also gave them motivation to aspire towards greater heights of sanctity and achievement. Their thinking is therefore dynamic and concrete. It is never far removed from the pressing problems families all over Christendom are experiencing. And it is always close to the central mystery of marriage. It is what Cardinal Newman would have called existential thinking. That is to say, thinking that provides a solution to problems personally felt. God is thus brought very close to reality. The God of these pages, as of these families, is indeed the living God. A word might be said about the original text. Although many of these articles were written by outstanding literary figures, none of them was interested in expressing his thoughts in immortal prose. It was not an easy text to translate. There is about the original a breathless, impatient quality that is more characteristic of poetry than of prose. The translator sensed a note both of urgency and of depth. The fragmentary, hasty effort to catch an intuitive thought or a fleeting insight on the wing. These essays were written under the pressure, which these families felt, of girding themselves against dissolution with the strong armor of their faith. In that spirit they are here offered to other families. It is sometimes said that there are no longer any heroes in America. But anyone who has been in contact with any of the many Catholic homes in this country, knows how false that is. Anyone who has been at all close to the problems of these families, who has shared in their anxieties and temptations, and to a certain extent in their loves and their hopes, knows that in such families the battle for Christ is being fought on a heroic scale. It is here that the truth of Christ's presence in his church is felt as a practical fact. Such families, particularly, will find immense profit in reading these pages. In this way their number will be increased, in this way those countless homes that are a victim of their times will be diminished. It is fitting that our final word be one of dedication to our Divine Lord's own family, the family into which he chose to be born, the family in which he lived for 30 years. The family of Joseph and Mary. We sometimes forget that Joseph and Mary were husband and wife. And we so often fail to understand that in this family human love and Christian marriage reached an unparalleled degree of perfection. The family of Nazareth will remain until the end of time as the paragon of all marriages. In the calendar of the saints it is this husband and wife which the Church has placed in the highest position. Priests and sisters, bishops, even popes and martyrs only follow after these two. Part I. The height and the depth. The scope of marriage, the splendor of human love, unity in marriage. Chapter I. The scope of marriage. Words are merely the exchange currency of our minds. And like any currency, they can sometimes undergo influences exterior to themselves that alter their value. Among all words thus exposed, those of love and marriage have been particularly devaluated. Just what does love mean for most of our contemporaries? Some think it a sentimental dream, an adolescent emotion, or an imaginative refuge against daily routine. Perhaps others might consider it a simple hygiene or an agreeable pastime. In any and all cases, it is pretty well understood that love is not life. Life is made up of activities that are much more austere and durable. The meaning of marriage has likewise been strangely reduced and distorted. Among those who still retain some sense of and respect for its meaning, and who consider it more than a mere association of interests, how many see in it more than a social institution whose laws must be followed as a matter of duty in the name of abstract and rigid principles? Very few indeed understand it as the warm and living communication of two persons who alone give life and the world their full meaning. If love and marriage have become so far removed from life, if they have been reduced to little better than a shadow of themselves, it is because we have not set our ideal of them high enough. To think of love as pleasure and marriage as duty is to caricaturize the meaning of both. Love is an all-absorbing thing, it is the whole of life. It is not only the love of two persons living together, but it is also the life of all humanity around them, the enormous and swarming life of the universe itself. And marriage is best defined as adult love. That is to say, a love that is conscious of its human and cosmic responsibilities. All mankind, all society, all of creation, such is the scope of Christian marriage and the theme of this essay. Marriage and man. Leonardo da Vinci once said, "The greater a man is, the deeper is his love." There is no human act in which a person reveals himself or involves himself so totally as in love. In love, the best that is in us is brought out to the greatest advantage. What is often referred to as an amorous illusion, a sort of luminous halo that envelops a person in love, is not an error of the senses or of the imagination. It is the perception of a marvelous reality, otherwise invisible. It is the contemplation of the divine image that is so deeply a part of each one of us. It is a matter of common experience that as soon as we are touched by the mystery of love, interior springs are mysteriously loosed, and what is most pure and noble in us rises up and blossoms in our countenance. Around this fundamental impulse, as Stendhal put it, our whole personality crystallizes. When passion possesses us, it colors, by the force of its very nature, all of our activities, thoughts and dreams. It dominates, absorbs and consumes our whole being. And what passion does, love can do on a much more elevated level. The unity of spirit, which a writer like Morgan sought so avidly and so hopelessly, is the secret of any strong personality. Love, by centering all of our activities into one total offering, gives us that unity. Our adolescence was only a series of points of departure. Much like a small dog capering recklessly about, we tested ourselves in every direction. Culture, friendship, prayer, the apostolate, all of these things probably had their place in our adolescent years, but they lacked the definitive security of maturity. Adolescence was a time of preparation for a life as yet unknown, so many efforts in anticipation of work that could be done only later on. Then, one day, someone came into our lives and the totality of our strength and desires came to focus about that person. Our whole past appeared as a preparation for the mission we are now called to fulfill, to complete another human being who without us could not reach fulfillment, and with whom we could finally begin our life's work. The slow maturation of the past, participation in sports, intellectual culture, artistic refinement, spiritual awareness, was a necessary prelude to this moment. It was the natural path which led to a work that is, strictly speaking, divine, the work of living one's life. But love adds more to our personality than this unity centered in a person and in a mission. Love urges our personality to go beyond itself. We might recall De Vinci's epigram, the greater a man is, the deeper is his love. A man who has no desire for a wife and home will not know the real grandeur of a leader. In Marriage and the Home, he is no longer dealing with money or machines or even other men. He is personally responsible for the flesh and soul that breathes beside him, for this person who lives for him. His influence here will be recorded in eternity. Likewise, a woman who does not have a home and children will always be the prey of an obscure and tormenting thirst for that immolation and sacrifice which is the stuff of her grandeur. One without the other, man and woman will never be more than imperfectly virile or feminine, unless they find that perfection in a vocation of supernatural dedication. They need each other to be themselves. Marriage is like a mirror in which our true self appears clearly, brilliantly, and purely. We are then capable of resembling that image, for we can never become great by our own efforts but only through the exigencies of an admiring and patient love. Thus love is not only unity, but fulfillment. And because it is fulfillment, it is completion. It has become commonplace to speak of the masculine and feminine natures completing each other because they are different: intuition and reason, sensibility and action, sense of the individual and sense of the universal, one furnishes what the other lacks. We may even go so far as to say that the complete human being is the couple. But in a facile juxtaposition of the characteristics of the two sexes lurks a danger. Undoubtedly, conversation and various exchanges between the sexes enrich one with the riches of the other, but the mystery here is more interior. In Claude's words, love more than knowledge is a knowledge. The exterior presence of a man and woman, even when it is most intimate, is only a sign of an invisible and interior presence. The profoundest complement of the two sexes is a spiritual one. A husband becomes spiritually interior to his wife. She, in the biblical imagery, becomes the rib of her Adam, that is to say, as Claude again put it, the bone that envelops his heart. Henceforward, it is within herself that a woman experiences the reason and force of her husband, and man, wherever he is or whatever he does, is always accompanied, sustained and inspired by the interior presence of his wife. It is even recommendable at times to attenuate the vibration of physical presence, to get away from one another, to close one's eyes and remain silent in order to permit the expression of this silent song of love, which, more than anything else, resembles grace. Once this spiritual possession is attained, there is no longer any conflict between contemplation and action, between the intimacy of love and exterior activity. The labor of husband and wife is ever at the service of their love and becomes the expression of that love. A man who bears the interior presence of his wife within him brings new strength to his work, the very strength of his love. This may not be immediately noticeable to others or even to himself, but its effects are immense. So to a woman who possesses her husband in spirit and in truth, will be an infinitely greater and surer source of life, of strength and of peace than when, like a boat adrift in the open sea, she sought her harbor. We must add that this kind of human fulfillment is possible only in married love. Even the most passionate and faithful of free loves contains a germ of agony and fragility. Like a bouquet of flowers, it has no roots. Christian marriage is not a network of social convention, it is love that has become conscious of itself, which has voluntarily engaged and consecrated itself. Unity and indissolubility are not restrictions imposed upon love but essential exigencies that flow from the laws of its nature. Husband and wife are two in one flesh. We cannot improve upon the Bible's definition, for it expresses not only a divine command but the deepest desire that can rise from the human heart. It is also within the framework of married love that we attain our highest fulfillment, which is not human but supernatural. For since the passage of Christ among us, marriage is a sacrament, that is, a divine gift united to a human gift. Penance, the Eucharist, and personal prayer remain the principal sources of grace, and through them God acts more directly. But married persons are also the ministers of Christ for each other.